I was walking far from home, where the names were not burned alone.
Hello?
Hey, is this Lauren Barker?
It is.
Hey, it's Jenna Pell.
I know, I have a call already.
Oh God, gets me every time. How have you been?
I've been well. And you?
Yeah, I've been well. You're not a robot this time, which is good. Because that has kind of killed our other attempts at doing this. So you're back in human form, which is nice to hear.
Always a good thing, yes.
Yes. So I heard that you've had a pretty interesting week.
I've had a very weird week.
Why don't you recap me?
Well, I wrote a preview of the team now known as Magic Jack for World Soccer Eater. As I wrote a preview for every team, but the Magic Jack preview in particular got some attention from a very specific person, let's say.
Maybe is it the international man of mystery himself, Dan Borslow?
It was indeed. Dan Borslow apparently commenting on my preview of Magic Jack.
Really?
I
guess I would know that considering I put it up on All I Kit, but yeah, go ahead.
So Dan Borslow commenting on my article said, "Why would I ever change something that continues to win every day? Magic Jack is here to stay. Well written piece on the quality of the team you've put together. This team was put together not just to win, but to make sure voices would be heard when the proper time comes." Dan Borislow.
I think the real question listening to that is when this proper time will come that he's referring to. Because it's been a couple of weeks, if not months now. And it seems like every new answer we have from this team produces yet more questions. Well, have you heard about the latest news regarding the venue situation?
I have, but why don't you give us a recap?
Okay, good thing I have it written down. Well, according to a video released on the Potomac Soccer Wire website, there's an interviewer interviewing Dan Borislow himself, and he asks about, I forgot what the question was even, the initial question, but eventually the subject about the venue situation comes up regarding the split venue, situation in both D.C. and South Florida. And Dan Borislow essentially says that it was that this decision to play all of Magic Jack's games exclusively in South Florida came about by or was made, was determined by both WPS and Puma. And he was willing to play some games in D.C. if he had the choice to, but apparently that was not going to fly with WPS and Puma suits. So what do you make of that?
I think it's nonsense. I think he's trying to, you know, there's a lot of Freedom fans that are upset, and I think if he can take the heat off himself, he's going to do it. You know, I mean, he's, I don't want to be too hard on the guy because he so far seems to have put together a really great team. But I think this idea of blaming the league and blaming Puma is nonsense.
Okay, well, for the one, I know this is going to sound crazy, but for once, I'm actually going to take him at his word. And I actually think that he's being truthful here. I don't think he's being disingenuous. And this is not from any kind of inside information whatsoever, but it's just something that I feel is that Puma, or I don't know what Puma has to do with this, first of all. I have no idea how they're making any decisions or how they're calling the shots in this. But from a WPS standpoint, I can see where the league has finally put its foot down and said that it is a slap in the face to Washington fans if you play only two games in two or three games or whatever the number is in that market, a market that has been so loyal to that team over like the past decade through, three different leagues. I don't see how. I think that it's much more. It makes a lot more financial sense if the team just establishes itself firmly in one market, and that's it. Rather than having a foot in two markets, it's just easier to cut your losses in the DC market and just start yourself anew in the South Florida market.
No, I agree with you. If it's about we don't want you to play a split schedule, I agree with that. But I think what I initially got from that video, and I think what a lot of people got, because it's not entirely clear, is that he wanted to play in D.C., and they were the ones that insisted he move the team to Florida.
Yeah, I mean, that's
I didn't get anything about he wanted to play a split schedule from that. I don't think it's clear, and I think the way that I initially took it before I thought about it, and I think the way a lot of people probably took it was, I wanted to keep the team in DC, but WPS and Puma said they wanted a team in Florida, and that's why we moved there.
I think that you're drawing a lot from that, because I mean, if you read the initial interview of his on the Equalizer website, I think that it was always in his plans to play some games in the South Florida market, and just the exact number has varied over the past couple of months. And I think that maybe he came to the table with that split venue situation idea, and maybe it was, I mean, in the press release about the schedule, it said that the team was interested in, the team was going to play 2 or 3 games or whatever it was at the in Germantown, Maryland. So I think that since then, I just have a feeling that WPS just stepped in and said, no, it's all or nothing.
Right, and if it was about specifically the split schedule, I don't blame them for that. I honestly think it's ridiculous to have a team play a split schedule. I think especially
when it's like 4 states away. You know, they're
right,
like,
exactly.
These markets are 4 states removed from each other. It's not like we're playing in, you know, like Rhode Island and Connecticut, you know?
Right, and you're talking about too, for fans to have a fan base in 2 separate markets and to have to have your opponents, you know, how do you put a burden of paying for travel to Florida on some opponents but not others? Yeah, so, you know, I mean, I think I from that standpoint of them not wanting to play a split schedule, I could totally understand. And from that aspect of it, you know, I wouldn't blame the league for stepping in. But I think this is also a way for him to take some of the kind of anger off of himself.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's there's no doubt that Freedom fans are angry and rightfully so to have their team kind of ripped away from them.
Yeah. Right. Well, I don't know what I guess there's the Freedom fans have plenty of reasons to feel angry with him and the way that he's conducting himself over the past couple of weeks, just in terms of the lack of communication. But I don't know. I guess the league doesn't kick off for another 2 weeks, right? 2 weeks to today, almost.
Yeah.
I guess he still has some time. I guess I'm still going to grant him the benefit of the doubt just for now, because, and I don't know exactly what I'm waiting for. Maybe I'm just waiting for the new PR person to be unveiled, and then they'll have like they'll release press releases that include, I don't know, like a blow by blow account of everything that's happened over the past couple of months, and like all the questions will be answered in terms of the stadium issue and various coaching positions and et cetera, right? I know that's not going to happen, but at the same time, I still will reserve my judgment until the season actually kicks off. And I don't know if I'm being too fair to him or what or whatnot, but yeah, I still feel that he has some time to explain himself and his actions. The actions that he's taken since November, right? December, actually.
Yeah, and you know, at the end of the day, he like I said, I mean, he along with Brianna Scurry and Mike Lyons, have put together a really good team, and honestly, you know, at the end of the day, if the team that's on the field is not total crap.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that counts for something.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, and they've put together a decent team. I mean, it you know, like every other team, they're going to take a hit come World Cup, but
yeah.
You know, it's a
especially in midfield and up top. And
yeah,
that goalkeeper.
But in terms of making statements, I mean, aside from, you know, maybe a rogue comment here or there on a team preview, he for the most part has stopped kind of making these crazy, outlandish statements that marked so much of the beginning of his involvement with the team, and has started to make statements, albeit ones that you have to do a bit of digging to find out about, with the team he's putting together.
Yeah, but at the same time, I think one of the primary reasons as to why he's not putting out these ridiculous statements anymore and comments anymore, it's because he's not talking to the media at all. I mean, this can't be denied. And I think that, I mean, yeah, like the last time we've actually heard from the guy is when he commented on your preview, and it wasn't, he didn't make an outlandish statement at all, you know? But I think that he knows, he understands how badly his image is being harmed with the things he says. And he understands the flack that he's receiving from various Freedom fans and various fans of the league, in the league in general. And I just think, I just see this as him pulling back completely, and him shielding both himself and the team from more of this, for more flack from various corners for as long as he can. And the thing, the question is, I mean, it goes back to like what started this conversation initially. The question is, how long will he keep this protective barrier around him and the team itself? You know, will he ever just pull it back and start talking again?
Well, I don't know. I think his hope, and I think in a way all of our hope, is that his team and what they do on the field is going to start speaking for him.
Yeah.
And he won't need to. And you know, hopefully whatever's going on, that you know, they do unveil some sort of a front office staff soon, and that they start having semi-normal, you know, communications, be they press releases or whatever else again. And we can kind of move past this kind of radio silence period that's happened.
Yeah.
And you know, like you said, the season's 2 weeks away, and you know, the Magic Jack actually doesn't play the first weekend of the season.
Mm-hmm.
So they've got 3 weeks. They don't play until the 16th, and you know, by then, I mean, they're going to have to put a team on the field. So, you know, that's where I think we're going to see the next Damon, is they're going to go to Philly and they're going to, you know, whoever's on the field, and that's going to be their next big statement.
Right. Right. And until then, it's just more speculation, I suppose. But I think, I mean, yeah, in essence, I agree with you in that the biggest statement he wants to make and the biggest statement he wants to leave is the quality of his team. I mean,
right.
If there's one thing we can agree on, it's that he wants to be the absolute best in everything that he does. And that will certainly extend to his team. You know, I mean, it's called Magic Jack, for goodness sake. I mean, it's, his identity is stamped all over it, you know? So it's not only his reputation, it's also his company's reputation in a sense. So, I know it's been like 6 months since we recorded first, but in that, when we first talked about this kind of this thing, you said that this was essentially an advertisement for his product and his company, and it absolutely is. So yeah, that's illustrated in the quality that he's brought into South Florida and the quality that he's drafted, and I think that it will hopefully bear fruit come mid-April.
Yeah,
and beyond.
And yeah, and I mean, you know, I'm going to do my best to try and get down to Philly for that game on the 16th. And, you know, I think it'll be interesting to see. I mean, as kind of the WPS CEO talked about at the draft when she sat and spoke with us, you know, and said essentially at some point this is going to become a new team. And,
yeah.
You know, so in a way, this is going to be the first time, you know, I mean, we've seen the Washington Freedom play for two seasons. But this is really, you know,
a new team.
A new team. And so I think, you know, it's going to be interesting to see down in Philly, like I said, what that team is, because it's really going to be, this isn't, I mean, you've got a couple of the same big names. You've got, you know, your Abby Wambach and a couple other players, but beyond that, you know, it's a new name. We've heard they're, you know, ditched their old kits and they're going to have new colors.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, that's going to be their debut as this team. Mm-hmm. And you know, however sad it is, the Freedom is no more.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It's, yeah, the Freedom is just simply a relic of the past now, really. But what do you, okay, I have one final question for you. Do you think that the league has been flat-footed at all in terms of dealing with Dan Borislow and everything that's been involved in this ordeal?
I think if this was a different situation, I think if this was a year ago, or if this was 5 years from now and the league was in a different place, I think their response would have been very different.
Yeah.
But I think where we're at now, where, look, you know, you can say whatever you want and you can hate the guy or whatever. But at the end of the day, it can't be denied that without his involvement, there's no league, period.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I think, you know, as much as this isn't good for Freedom fans and this isn't, you know, maybe
it's
good for
ideal.
The league in the long run at all, this is what they had to do to survive for another year.
Yeah,
and
right.
And that's what this is about. Is it can't be about the long term right now. It has to be about if we're gonna play in 2011, we're gonna do what we have to do. And if that means we have to step back and maybe let this guy do whatever the hell it is he's doing,
yeah,
we're gonna
so be
let
it.
Him do it because it's either that or there's no teams and there's no league. And you know, essentially, you and I aren't sitting here talking about this.
Right. Yeah, and I absolutely. I mean, excuse me. I think that there is certainly a level of appeasement that the league has done, and I think that they are completely justified in doing it because the league was in such a vulnerable position before he came in and, you know, and added his investment into the league that, yeah, I mean, as we all know, I mean, we wouldn't be talking about any of this stuff if he hadn't come, presumably, right? And I also think that just – and it seems like it is certainly a situation. With all that being said, it does seem like a certain like a situation in which the tail is wagging the dog a bit. And but it's just one of those sucky things, you know. I mean, it's just WPS is just in that position, unfortunately. And I don't know if it can really do anything about it. I mean, you know, you're never just like the fact that the name has changed. Like, just look at the variations of the name, right? I mean, we've gone through like four variations of that name.
At the beginning of my preview for WSR, I had to use the strike through quite a bit.
I think you used it like what, four times, right?
There were a few.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but I mean, even that kind of tells you how little power WPS has over this. You know, I don't think that WPS can mandate that he change his name once and for all. Because they would have if there was, but and also you mentioned that, I mean, they're focusing a lot on the short term here, which is true, but at the same time they also are looking long term. I feel in that this really can't be a one and done situation. You know, they can't piss him off to the point where he just withdraws his investment and he's out after the season. Because assuming that there is no expansion next season, and obviously we don't know that, because I mean, look how fast Western New York came into the league,
right?
And obviously there are always talks about Dallas, Vancouver, and Seattle, but if that doesn't happen and he's done, then what, that's going to leave you five teams maybe, and then who knows, I mean, who knows by the end of the season what other teams are in a bit of trouble,
right?
You know, so I think there is some kind of long-term vision here as well with what,
right,
they're
absolutely
doing.
And it's about keeping the guy happy. And again, the WPS CEO, whose name I still cannot pronounce,
just spell it.
I don't think I can spell it off the top of my head either.
A-N-E.
But what is it?
You really want me to spell it?
No, I want you to pronounce it.
Oh okay. Anne Marie Ilaris.
There you go. Her. She revealed to us again at the draft that part of the original deal of him signing on was that he'd be allowed to change the name. And
I wonder if it was part of the deal was that he could change it five times.
Well,
without settling on a single one yet.
You know, I don't know if there were specifics, but yeah, I mean, right. But I mean, you know, that's the thing is. They do have to appease him, and they do have to keep him happy, and ultimately, you know, if that means we have a league for another year, and then, you know, hopefully it picks up steam. You mentioned Western New York, how fast they got in.
Yeah.
You know, hopefully the same thing will happen at the end of the season. Hopefully they can keep him happy enough that he's willing to go for it for another year. You know, this year is going to be a very strange year for the league, I think.
Yeah.
And next year as well. But you know, hopefully this can be the thing that gives that little kick to keep moving it forward.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned some of the strange things that the league is going to have to expect this year. And perhaps the biggest would be the Women's World Cup, which will kick off on June 26th. And I think that there's kind of been like an unspoken issue. I don't want to say conflict, but there's been some kind of issue brewing between U.S. Soccer and WPS in terms of the length of time that WPS players who play on the U.S. Women's National Team are expected to miss this season. I think it's fair to say that most U.S. Women's National Team players miss the bulk, if not all, of preseason. I mean, I know that Alex Morgan played in that game against the boys team last week, I believe.
And scored a goal.
And scored a goal, yeah, which she would do. So, much like Alex Morgan. But I think that in general, a lot of the players were in, because, I mean, if you look at the schedule, they only had, the national team players only had a week's break between the end of the Algarve Cup and training in the UK. But I think the big question is how much time these players will be gone from their teams. What do you make of this just from the outset?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, and we've talked just privately, and you're going to hate what I'm about to say because I say too much, but I think it's going to have to be one of those things where we're going to have to wait and see. You know, the season is 2 weeks away, and we're going to have to wait and see who, you know, takes the field on the 9th and 10th. Mm-hmm. And who's around. You know, whatever is going on between the national team and, or not going on between the national team and WPS, you know, nobody really knows for sure. We know that the team is going to be training in Florida. We know they've got 3 friendlies before the World Cup. And in addition to this one that's coming up on the 2nd against England. And I honestly think it's going to be one of these things where it's just going to be every week. You know, it's going to be who shows up is who shows up. And I don't think we're going to know. It's a tough thing for the league. But, you know, essentially, this is what it is. It's a World Cup year. And, you know, obviously U.S. Soccer's focus is to win a World Cup.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And you really can't blame them, because that is their main objective. I mean, this team hasn't won the World Cup since 1999, and especially given the difficulty they had in qualifying for this tournament, and a lot of those players put that down to exhaustion from the WPS season. You know, it's unlikely that U.S. Soccer wants to relive a situation like that, so therefore they want these players as well rested as possible. Just, I mean, a huge inconvenience to that is that they're playing club soccer too, and they're contracted to their pro teams. And yeah, I mean, I think I'm on board with you a bit in saying that, and thinking that I don't think that we're going to know the exact number. I mean, there have been numbers swirling around over the past couple of weeks as to how many games these players will be there prior to the World Cup. But I think it's one of those things where if we do ever end up knowing, it won't be in preseason at all. You know, it's like one of those, because I mean, a situation that's that sensitive, I guess, and holds that much significance to both parties is not going to be made overnight. I'm sure that this is something they've been working on over the past couple of months, and it's a long-term issue between WPS and U.S. Soccer. And yeah, I mean, I think that it might end up being like one of those unspoken things where, you know, it's going to be a surprise. You know, we're going to see Abby Wambach play for Magic Jack one day, and then the next weekend she won't be there, regardless of whether or not it's in May. And it's just going to be one of those wait and see kind of things. And I hate waiting. I hate that uncertainty. But at the same time, there's nothing that we as fans can do about it. And I mean, beyond that, there's nothing that that WPS can do about it either.
Right. And you know, I mean, ultimately in the soccer world, in the greater soccer world, you know, obviously, WPS, or the World Cup rather is, you know, far more important and is a larger priority. And at the end of the day, I think most soccer fans, you know, and you hear this a lot in the men's game, this thing of club or country,
yeah.
You know, but I think at the end of the day, people understand World Cup more than they understand whether it's WPS or you know, any other league in the world. You know, World Cup is something people understand. It's something that people get. And for U.S. soccer's purpose and for just soccer and women's soccer on the whole, I think it's that's got to be the focus. And, you know, if the U.S. and WPS maybe takes a hit during this first half of the season, but especially if the U.S. does well, to come back and you know, have these players be able to play and say, hey, look, you can see these players who just won a World Cup play every weekend. I mean, that could be huge for WPS.
Yeah. And yeah, and like, I mean, onto that point, I was researching some of the stats from some MLS players who played in the 2010 World Cup last year in South Africa. And I mean, if you look at like an Edson Buttle case, I mean, I think that all WPS GMs and coaches are hoping for an Edson Buttle case, and that he didn't have that much time. I think he played, he may have had only like, I don't know, 3 appearances in the World Cup. But he, like, when he got back to LA, he literally could not stop scoring. It was like every single game. He played every single game for the Galaxy after that point. And he had either a goal or an assist or both in like every single game for the rest of the regular season. And same with Landon Donovan, but that's because he's like a freaking like genetic freak, and he can just like nothing is, there's no challenge that he can't surmount. But I mean, Donovan played like 90, the full 90 in every single game after the World Cup. So maybe, I mean, but that being said, the U.S. women are expected to go a bit deeper than the men did or will have. But at the same time, I think that there could be a bit much made about the exhaustion factor of a World Cup.
Right. Well, yeah, and you are asking a lot of the players, and that we don't know, you know, the mystery of why, when all the WPS teams are pretty centrally located in kind of the Northeast, with the exception of Atlanta and Magic Jack, why they're having their camp in Florida. A bit of a mystery, I think, yeah. You know, but, and I think that, you know, certainly plays into it in some way, but, you know, I think you have to look at it as what you're going, like, with the World Cup. I mean, if Alex, let's take Alex Morgan for an example, if Alex Morgan, you know, goes to the World Cup and continues, you know, Alex Morganing,
now that's a verb.
Yeah, why not? You know, people are going to know who she is. You know, Alex Morgan, we've seen, scored a clutch goal in Italy. You know, scored a clutch goal. I mean, it was a friendly, but essentially it kept the U.S.'s home winning streak alive in Philly. Well, the 6 people that were there saw it. but, you know, she...
And they all were pumped.
Right. And, you know, but Alex Morgan scores a clutch goal in the World Cup. This is on ESPN. It's on, you know, ESPN2, whatever. She comes back, we can keep seeing Alex Morgan, and we can see her with Marta, I mean, who we know is going to have a big World Cup, with Christine Sinclair. I mean, it's...
Right. No, but if that scenario does come to pass, I think that it's very conceivable to think that when she gets back to WPS, she could be a bigger draw than both Marta and Christine Sinclair, given the fact that she's an American, she can score goals on the international stage, she's a very exciting player to watch, and lastly, I'm not sure how many people have picked up on this, but she's pretty good looking. So I think that that's a potential win-win situation for both U.S. Soccer and WPS, and that's kind of what both parties would be hoping for. It would be kind of like a symbiotic relationship. But I think, bring it back to the present, you mentioned that the team is training in West Palm Beach, Florida. And I think, like, in our private conversation between you and I, we were kind of like, well, does this make a whole lot of sense, given that the U.S. men's team trained in Princeton, New Jersey before they embarked on the 2010 World Cup. So make of that what you will. But just a side thing, I mean, doesn't it look great for Dan Borslow? I mean, his players are going to be training like a couple miles up or down the road. I don't know, Floridian geography, but wherever it is. I know that West Palm Beach is close to Boca Raton.
Yeah.
And so he'll have his players, you know, as opposed to the rest of the league, including Atlanta, as opposed to the rest of the league, these players will be expected to take flights back to their team, their club teams, whereas his players will just be taking a drive, and that's it, you know. But I think, and also, just to elaborate that on a bit, do you think that it's plausible to think that these players will be there for those games in May? I mean, especially, like, talking about a defensive player, okay? I mean, defensive players have to know their system. They have to know their defensive systems, and they have to have had developed a relationship with their fellow defenders and their teammates. Do you think that it's fair? Do you think it's reasonable to think that players like Rachel Bueller and Amy LePelvet, and even Stephanie Cox, for that matter, will be able to just fly in on, like, Saturdays up to Boston from Florida and just slot in back with their teams, and that'll be that.
That's a bad example because they're all playing their club soccer together.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's the whole point. Yeah, but regardless, even then, but they're still playing with a whole new different system.
Yeah,
under a different coach.
Absolutely, and I think you talk about a different coach. You know, I think Tony DiCicco is someone whose mentality perhaps could not be more different.
Than Sionhaga's
or anyone's. it's gonna be a big question, and I think. You know, it's going to be, I think you, for you and I, we're going to try and hopefully do the podcast thing a little more regularly now. We seem to have gotten our technical issues worked out, iPhone. we're going to try and do this a little more regular. And I think it's going to be one of those things that from week to week, we're just going to have to see, like you said, who shows up.
But, okay, so yeah, to the last point about this subject that I kind of wanted to hit, which is, do you think that there will be a negative, an adverse impact related to ticket sales in these months with these WPS teams?
No.
Okay. Simply?
I really don't. I think, for better or for worse, and you know, I've complained about this plenty, that, you know, I think they should, and I know other people have as well, and I know there's people, I'm in my late 20s, let's say, and fortunately for me, I get to go to the games as media, and I don't have to, you know, sit in the stands among the small children whom I'm frightened of.
But you get to go to games? Don't rub it in, please.
Some of us are in a place where there are no games. No, I'm fortunate enough that I live pretty centrally to a bunch of teams and stuff, but, you know, I think for better or for worse, a huge chunk of WPS audiences are youth soccer teams, are parents of their kids looking for a cheap thing to do on a Sunday afternoon. You know, that's their demographic. And I think those kids, while they may know Abby Wambach, while they may know Hope Solo, while they may know, you know, Heather O'Reilly and stuff, they're not getting in the car and driving themselves. They're not the ones making the decision to go. You know, their parents are, and the parents are the ones saying, come on, kids, hop in the car and let's go to a game. It's a cheap thing to do on a Sunday afternoon in the spring. I don't think, because the kids aren't sitting there saying, because I don't think, you know, the kids aren't following this on Twitter. I hope for their sake they're not listening to this podcast, although I have been very well behaved, my usual language.
I know, we haven't even had to bring the sensor out.
I know.
You haven't even had to have a 7-second delay.
No, I don't think those kids are following it that closely. They're sitting there throwing a temper tantrum in the kitchen going, no, I'm not going if Abby's not there, you know? I don't think they know.
I want to see Heather O'Reilly!
Right. I mean, I think, yeah, they're super psyched when those players are there, but I think for the most part, it's just the parents are throwing the kids in the car and going, hey, let's go, or a youth team is going or whatever. And so, I for a few people, yeah, maybe, but for the most part, no, because I think, you know, your audience is those people, and your audience is people who are looking for something to do, not, I'm going to go see Abby Wambach play. You know, we've seen that everyone said, oh, Marta's going to be a draw wherever she goes, and maybe for the first couple games in 2009 it was that way, but it's never quite worked out that way, and I don't think it necessarily has. There are exceptions, you know, you've got, I'm sure Abby Wambach's return to Rochester, for example, but for the most part, no.
Will they even play when before the? I have to look it up, but yeah, go ahead.
They play May.
I mean, I know they'll
1st.
Play, but I'm just wondering. Oh, I'm looking at that.
Or no, they play May.
May 22nd, which is one of those games where they may be there and they may not.
Right.
See.
So, but I mean, that's a thing, and for like that game, yeah, May 22nd, we don't know if they'll be there. And I think in that where there's another storyline. It could have an effect, but just in the general, you know, other 17 games of the season, I don't think so. I mean, what's your thought on it?
I think that I tend to agree with you, other than, and I was just thinking this recently, and I don't have, I mean, again, I don't know if this is actually true or not. I could see how this could adversely affect season ticket sales and that people might be a little bit scared off by the fact that they know that the A-list players won't be there for a good portion of the season, and they might just pick and choose their games. I don't know. I think that unless the really, really loyal fans who may be invested in new soccer clubs in the area, they might go regardless, and they might use their season tickets, and they might not. The World Cup is going to last 3 weeks plus 3 or 4 weeks of training, so it's not going to be like the entire season. Unless we're actually like glancing over ticket sales at this very moment, there's really no way that we can speculate as to like the potential impact. And it's just one of those things where we're just going to have to wait and see how it all plays out.
Yeah, and I honestly, you know, I don't think those people exist. I think there's two groups that 95% of the fans fit in, which is either, you know, diehard fans, like you mentioned, like, for example, the Riptide in Boston, who are going to go to Breakers games to support the Breakers. And, it would be great to... Right, and it would be great to see Kelly Smith. It would be great to see, you know, Amy LaPelvet, Rachel Beal, Lauren Chaney, all these players. But because they're not there, it doesn't mean they're not going to go. They're still going to show up because they're going to support their team. I think, and maybe Boston is kind of the exception to the rule, but I think there's those people who are the diehard fans who are going to support the team, and there's, like we mentioned, the youth soccer folks and the parents looking for something to do on a Sunday afternoon, a Saturday afternoon, the teams, the Girl Scout troops, whatever. I think there's just so few people in the middle that it's for the most part not going to have too much of an impact. But right. Like you said, you know, we're going to have to wait and see. And I think, you know, like I said, we're going to try and do this a little more regularly from now on. And I think this will be something, you know, that's going to come up again and again, I'm sure. I think with that, we should move on to our ending segment, the Carly Lloyd Person of the Week.
Indeed. I have been waiting so long to bestow this honor on somebody. I just can't. I'm just beside myself with excitement that it's finally here.
I think 160,000 plus people would agree. Jenna.
And counting.
Yes, and counting. Jenna, who is our, or who are our nominees?
Well, I think that we have joint nominees, because I think that we probably agree on this. But I hereby nominate Casey Nogueira and Allie Long to be the inaugural Persons of the Week for their dog rescuing skills.
Just to give a little background, you said to me, you said, did you see it? And I said, yeah, I'll send it to you. And we put it on YouTube and put it up on All White Kid as a little bit of a joke. And amongst my weird week, it ended up on Dirty Tackle and then on Deadspin and has gone viral, as the kids say. And, you know, I felt a little weird about it, but, you know, I'm happy that people are seeing, you know, the teams and that, you know, Sky Blue and the league essentially are getting some exposure, so.
No, but I'm not sure how much exposure the league is getting exactly, to be fair. I think people are watching it primarily to see a dog get tickled into submission by two female soccer players, but maybe I'm being a little bit too cynical there. But yeah, no, I think that every time I see that video, I smile because I think it's just great. And I'm just really shocked by how quickly it spread like wildfire and all that. And because like I called you like the day after it had went up. I think that was like a Thursday. So I put it up on Wednesday. And I said, Lauren, guess how many people have watched your video? And you're like, I don't know, 8? And by that time it was like 8,000 and you like freaked out. But then, it's going to hit like, well, there's no telling as to what it's going to hit, but it's going to be even bigger than it is now. So, well done, Allie Long and Casey Nogueira.
Yes.
And well done to the German Shepherd, who I suddenly want. I don't like German Shepherds usually, but that one seemed to be an absolute sweetie. And he's just very cute.
Yeah, and well, I think maybe among those 160,000 plus, there are two or three people who now, you know, maybe know about the league, and that makes me feel a little bit better about it. So, you know,
and it's
let
much
me have
less...
that.
All right, I'll give that to you only because you're the one that put the video up.
Yeah.
But and therefore you get some leeway. But I also think that it's I'm happier to see that get views than I am to see the de-dogging video by Abby Wambach, because that's just because not that this isn't the case with the dog video, But with Abby Wambach's de-dogging video, I just felt depressed as to see how many empty seats were in the stands behind and around that dude. Again, not that that's the case at all with this video, but there's something about that game that just brings back bad memories. Oof. Other than Alex Morgan's goal.
I was there. So, tell me about it.
I know you were there, yeah. So I don't have to tell you.
Yeah, wrote an angry... I turned into Andy Rooney, I think, and wrote a kind of angry rant about why only 2,505 people showed up to that game. But let's not rehash the past.
Yeah, no, but it even prompted a call from U.S. Soccer itself.
It did. I did
U.S. Soccer World, so.
I did get a telephone call from someone from U.S. Soccer about that, and had a very nice conversation with someone from U.S. Soccer about it. And
yeah, and you're not being sarcastic there. It really was a good conversation.
No,
I
had a very good conversation with U.S. Soccer and appreciated them taking the time to reach out and explain their side of the story. But anyway... With that, I think
do you think that now we're going to get a call from the tournament organizers from the video?
I hope not. I don't speak Turkish.
No, that's true. Well, maybe they can try to tell us. They can help us find the dog. Because that would just make me so happy.
You think we'd have him as a guest on the podcast?
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah. He'd probably talk more sense than either one of us. So
we will work on that. For our next episode.
And speaking of which, the next episode we're going to try to do a big 2011 WPS preview. But knowing us, it won't be released until after the 2011 WPS season has concluded. But we'll try not to make that happen.
No, yeah, we're going to try and make this a more regular thing. Like I said, figured out our technical difficulties. But I think for this week, we've rambled enough.
Mm-hmm.
So for All White Kits, Jenna Pell, and me, Lauren Barker, thank you for listening to thank you for listening to episode 2 of our still untitled podcast.
I was walking far from home, where the names were not burned along the wall. Saw a building high as hell.